is the same as a refrigerator.
Okay.
Coming out.
Tonight, we're going to be looking at Genesis chapter 7 again, but the second half of it, exactly the second half of it by verse count, anyway, 13 through 24. So before we do that, before we get started, let's go to the Lord again and ask him to teach us, because that's where it comes from. Lord and Father, we do come together here again tonight. We thank you for each other and this and ability to study your scriptures together. We ask you to teach us because we know that's where teaching comes from. It's not us. It's you. So we have nothing to complain about if we don't ask you first. And we're not looking for something to complain about. We take whatever it is you send our way. But we ask you to teach us this passage and show us what it is about it that's unique. What is it that makes it different from the other passages, even though there's a lot of similarity? And teach us here tonight, for we ask it in Christ's name. Okay. So tonight we're looking at Genesis 7, 13 through 24. Let's read the passage first before we get started on it. And verse 13, on the very same day, Noah and Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and Noah's wife and the three wives of his sons with them entered the ark. They and every beast after its kind, all cattle after their kind, every creeping thing that creeps on the earth after its kind, and every bird after its kind, every bird of every sort. And they went into the ark to Noah, two by two of all flesh, in which is the breath of life. So those that entered, male and female of all flesh, went in as God had commanded him, and the Lord shut him in. Verse 17. Now the flood was on the earth 40 days. The waters increased and lifted up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. The waters prevailed and greatly increased on the earth, and the ark moved about on the surface of the waters. And the waters prevailed exceedingly on the earth, and all the high hills under the whole heaven were covered. The waters prevailed 15 cubits upward, and the mountains were covered. And all flesh died that moved on the earth, birds and cattle and beasts and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, and every man, all in whose nostrils was the breath of the spirit of life, all that was on the dry land, died. So he destroyed all living things which were on the face of the ground, both man and cattle, creeping thing and bird of the air. They were destroyed from the earth. Only Noah and those who were with him in the ark remained alive. And the waters prevailed on the earth 150 days. That's pretty much a standard, straightforward historical narrative. This is some events that occurred, and it's given us some details about it. And it seems kind of redundant, doesn't it? You look at it as I say, oh, look, we've heard how many the animals were going in there. We talked about them. We counted them. We've done all this three times. So what's different about this passage? And I go back and you look at it in verse and back in chapter six, when we looked at it, when it talks about the animals that are going to be loaded on board the ark and Noah's family and all that, that's all part of the description of how to build the ark. You're going to build the ark and this is going to go in. You're going to take your wife and your sons, you and your sons. And all these animals, right? Okay. So actually, that's kind of as if it's part of the blueprints, the description, the technical specifications for the ark. If he's building an ark, I mean, he said, make it this big, and this big. And he doesn't say anything more about it. What's got to go in there? How many cages do you need? He didn't deliver blueprints, I don't think. So Noah is sitting there figuring out what to do with it. Maybe God gave him every little detail. Maybe he did. God doesn't usually do that. He says, go out and do this, right? And he let him know this is what's going to go into it. And that's the way it was. It was a futurity. It was a statement of futurity. This is what's going to happen. This is what's going to go in. Right? So the way I look at that first listing is this is what you have to build the ark for. He gave him the reason. But this is your cargo, not only all the animals of all these different kinds, but all the food for them and everything else. So that's part of your design specs. So he's got it. Okay, we've got that. In chapter 7, last week, we were looking at it, and we went through this same list again. But in that point, we were seeing God told Noah, go ahead. Get in the ark. Remember we said it was just the final manifest. Here we're going in with it. So, well, it was the all aboard order, right? get on board with your family and all the animals. Get up, get on board the ark. And as if they did, and we even went up last week at the end of verse 12, where we were into the flood. We were 40 days into the flood, 40 days and 40 nights it rained on the earth, right? The water coming down. So that's there's the order to get on board. And it occurred, but this one, we're going to see the same list of animals again here. However, the list is a little different. We're going to look at it a little bit differently, because this one is looking at, once they're in the ark, what's in there? You said, well, it would all be the same, wouldn't it? Well, yeah, it would. However, this list is very specific. It's much more detailed, and it's like he's nailing it down that he's talking about every animal on earth. And we're going to look at that, right? Every animal was wiped out or was in the ark. And he talks about the different kinds again. But when he talks about the kinds, he doesn't just say clean or unclean, something like that. So he goes on and lists some of the same words we've seen. Okay, so when we start off in verse 13, on that very same day, Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and Noah's wife and the three wives of his sons with them entered the ark. We had said before, there's eight people on the ark. Noah and his wife and his three sons and their three wives. Now, this is where it nails it down and lets you know that that's exactly three wives for three sons. There wasn't any polygamy or anything going on with them, right? He says it. Very same day, Shem and the three wives of his sons with him. It makes it very clear that makes sense. We're talking about eight people. We kind of got that idea from before, but there was still a little bit of ambiguity left in it. And this one, he's saying, this is what's on the ark. There's eight people. Eight people, and that's all. All right. On that very same day, it says, what day? What day is he talking about? Very same day. It was the very same day God commanded it. Get inside. Right. So they entered the ark. Yes, verse. Let's talk about that very same. On the very same day. That's that Hebrew word etzem, which it means self-same, the self-same, the self-same day. So you're talking about in the one day, and it's also talking about in one day all this happened. Okay. So I thought that was kind of interesting that 104 times that word's translated bone. Bone? Bone? Okay. 11 times self-same. Okay. The strangeness of language. I remember we're looking at a text that's not written in English. It's in Hebrew. Right? So it does mean exactly that same day. And he's calling attention to, he's emphasizing that it was the same day. Verse 14. They and every beast after its kind, all cattle after their kind, every creeping thing that creeps on the earth after its kind, and every bird after its kind, every bird of every sort. You see in your outline, I've highlighted in different colors some of the different words in there, like every and all. When it talks about every beast, all cattle, every creeping thing, every bird of every sort, every bird, every, all. All of those are the same word, kola. And nine times it's translated everything, eight times it's translated all. Three times whosoever, two times whatsoever. You get the idea that he's saying all of them, not leaving anything out. It's complete. There are no exceptions. So of every type, every kind of beast, every kind of cattle, every kind of creeping thing on the earth, every kind of bird, and they're all after their kind, right? When it says after his kind, it's telling you what he's got, all these different kinds, every single kind is in the ark. There's nothing left out. Okay. The words you've seen before, kaya, beast, is kaya. It means life. We've seen it before when we were back in Genesis 1. We saw that, the word for beast, behemoth, for cattle, kind of related to behemoth, right, from Job. Every creeping thing, that's remus. Creeping thing. Remember, the idea behind that word was it either had no or short legs. So we're talking about something that is literally things that creep on the earth. Creep or slither or whatever. Everything that creeps after its kind. And every bird, that's that same word, opha. We've seen that before too. He said when God created the birds, it was the ophas, the opha, the flyers that fly, right? It's that same word, every bird after its kind. And then it says again, every bird of every sort. That word bird, that's a different word. It's not the opha. It's not the same word for bird that was used before, but it's what it means. It's a tsipora, a bird or a sparrow. But the idea behind it is something small, little, maybe a hopping bird, little bitty thing that kind of hops around. It didn't leave one little thing out. You understand? Making the list, making sure you understand the list is complete. The list covers everything that was alive on the face of the earth, and right down to every little bitty bird flying thing. Okay. It said every bird of every sort. That word sort, kanaf, actually means wing. Every bird of every wing. So every little bird of every type of wing. When I look at that, that's what I thought at first. It's just redundant. We're just going down the same thing again. But I think that's what we're doing here in the text, is nailing down that the list was complete. And this is all part of what we're going to see in the rest of it, is that the flood was worldwide. There's a lot of people that absolutely insist that the flood was a local flood. There's no reason for any of this, as this is a local flood. Nothing. Nothing's getting wiped out if it's a local flood. And we'll see how when we're here in the next few verses, when we look at how high up the waters came. I mean, we're talking 15 cubits, 22 and a half feet or so above the top of the tallest mountain. That's a lot of water. So of every sort. That was verse 14. Verse 15. So we got the list. We know who we're talking about from verse 4. And they went into the ark to Noah, two by two. Remember, they said that the animals would present themselves. And that's what happened. They presented themselves. And that's how you loaded the ark up in one day. If you had 16,000 animals, 8 people, well, there were kids, so it could happen, right? If there were kids, I'm not sure. So They went into the ark to Noah. They loaded themselves in. They went to their nest. They went to their little cages or nesting areas, whatever they were, two by two. They went in pairs. Okay. Kind of clears up that, are we talking about single animals? Are we talking about two? And once again, it makes it clear it's talking about pairs of all flesh, in which is the breath of life. And there's that all again. And that all is that same word, kola. Right? All flesh, and which is the breath of life. Verse 15. And they went into the ark of all flesh, which is the breath of life. Let's see. Breath, ruach. Remember what we said when we were going through the fifth day? The fifth day. What constitutes life? What constitutes life? And you see, listen down there again. It's for God, apparently, the things that constitute life is something that moves and breathes and has blood, and in the blood is the nefesh. The life is in the blood. Remember how much we spent a lot of time on looking at that. The nefesh, which is the life, that's the life force. That's the thing that makes you different. That gives you a component. It's not physical. It's in the blood. It's the nefesh. And if it doesn't have those three things, then God apparently, I'm saying apparently because he never specifically states this, apparently doesn't consider it alive. That's verse 15. Verse 16. So those that entered, male and female of all flesh, went in as God had commanded him, and the Lord shut him in. So they went in male and female. Once again, we're seeing the pair. That's the pairs that were going in. They're all male, female. They're all male, female pairs. And that's the way God made everything. Male, female, male, female. And the Lord, that word again is the uppercase Lord, right? That means Yahweh. So Yahweh shut him in. We said before that big door in the side of the ark. You can see it doubling as a loading ramp, and everybody went up the door, and there's a hole in the side of the boat, but the Lord is the one that closed it. I'd like to have seen that. Would you like to have been there to see that? No, because you'd be on the outside. Wait a minute. But you can just kind of imagine. I don't know if it floated up or if it slammed or if it just disappeared where it was and reappeared up on the... I have no idea. It doesn't really matter. All you know is that God put it up there, and I doubt the door leaked. If God shut it, I doubt it leaked. Besides, I've got a feeling that Noah was a pretty good shipwright, and he could build a door. Didn't have to last that long. He built a 24,000-ton ship that's going to last for about a year. About a year. You can go back and count the days when you work through the next few chapters and all that. They spent 371 days in the ark. 371 days. So that's the first section. That's verses 13 through 16. The next section is verses 17 through 24. And this is the actual flood. We're seeing descriptions of the actual flood itself. Remember what we said about the flood? The flood is a demonstration of God's judgment. He doesn't just say there's going to be judgment. There's going to be punishment. You're going to die. He told Adam and Eve that. They apparently didn't take that aboard fully anyway. I don't know if they believed him or not, but God can tell us all kinds of different things. But the way that you actually learn something is if something is demonstrated to you. And this is a demonstration of God's judgment. He wiped out every living thing on earth except what was in the ark. And we're talking about, when we say on earth, we're talking about land animals, animals that depend on the land, animals that lived in the sea. And there are living animals that live in the sea that actually have breath, because fish breathe. They can suffocate, right? For those that were in the sea, some could survive. And apparently, he had some survive. Didn't have to be many. All right, so in verse 17, it says, now the flood was on the earth 40 days. A lot of people think that the flood lasted 40 days and 40 nights. Everything was done. Well, that's how long it rained unceasingly, unremittingly rained. Water's cascading out of the heavens, just hitting everything. I mean, yeah, a rain like we've never seen. Not even here. Not. So it didn't just last 40 days. Matter of fact, we're going to get to the end of the rise of the floodwaters at the end of this chapter. And that's at the end of 150 days. Do you understand? For the 150 days, that 40 days of rain, 40 days and nights of rain is included in the 150 days. But for 150 days, the waters were rising. We hit peak flood. We hit peak waters at the end of the 150 days. That's at the end of this chapter. It describes it as the flood, the waters increased and lifted up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. We're going to see a bunch of different times during this whole passage that it says the waters increased mightily, and you see prevail at least four times in there. We talked about what prevail means last time, right? It's like a conflict. It's something conquer somebody, you prevail over them. If you have a combat with somebody and you win, you prevail over them. It's a combat term, really. And the water won. This one, the earth lost and the water won. Okay. So the waters increased. It says the word is actually rabah, which means multiply or increase. You can see how many times it's translated there. 74 times translated multiply, 40 times translated increase. So the waters increase or multiply on the earth, right? Is you remember what we talked about the source of the waters was? Not what's not the water in the atmosphere. It's not just the waters that were in the seas to begin with. Most of the water that ended up on the surface of the earth at the end of the flood was not on the surface of the earth at the beginning of the flood. It was underground. It was deep in the earth, very deep. Now, there's enough water. Y'all already say this once. There's enough water on the surface of the earth. If the earth was smooth, it's nowhere near smooth, but if it were smooth, you know, no mountains, no valleys. It's just a smooth ball and with the water on top. The water that's on the surface now, okay, be about 1.5 miles deep. 1.5 miles. It's a lot of water. It's not enough water. If the earth was a ball bearing and it had that much water on the surface of it, you wouldn't be able to tell it was wet. You wouldn't. The scale of the earth is different than we usually think. We think of it as being something small we can comprehend. And it's not all that big. It's only 8,000 miles across in diameter, right? Only 8,000 miles that way, right? Or if you go around on the surface to the other side, it's about 12,500 miles. The Earth isn't exactly a sphere. It's an oblate spheroid, right? It bulges at the equator. And actually, it's wrinkled all over. Because everywhere there's a mass of land or whatever, you attract water to it. The sea around the Hawaiian Islands is 80 feet higher than the seas out there, or how high it would be if the Hawaiian Islands weren't there. 80 feet. That sounds like a lot. When you're looking at 8,000 miles, it's not that much, but it makes a difference. Okay, so the ark was lifted on all these waters. The waters are just pouring. However they're getting out from under the earth, it says the fountains of the great deep were broken up and the windows of heaven were open, right? Whether they're coming up out of the fissures, which I think a lot of water was coming up out of those fissures that you see in the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, which the Mid-Atlantic Ridge goes up across the top, comes down around the Ring of Fire all the way around the Pacific and goes back up and comes up to the Indian Ocean around Australia. And the Mid-Atlantic Ridge going south comes over and hits it. They intersect, right? I told you it's kind of like the way the laces on a baseball look. It actually goes around the earth twice. And that, according to hydroplate theory, that fractured in 2 hours. 2 hours. And all that water is coming up out of the ground, superheated. Rosie asked a question when we left here last time. If all that water was so hot, why is it that the rain, if it was in a vapor canopy, why would that cook the earth and all this hot water coming up from underneath even more? Why wouldn't it? It seems like that's your intuition, is that hotter water or steam, same pound mass, hotter water or steam, when it's allowed to expand to room temperature, atmospheric pressure, whatever, when it's allowed to expand into atmospheric pressure, that it will be hotter than something that started off at a lower temperature and pressure, right? But it turns out that's not the case. That's what got the guys at Three Mile Island. We could talk about that for a while, but we used to get training on Three Mile Island every year, right? Because, I mean, that's the big accident in the United States anyway. But they made that, they thought that. And they had seen it in their pressure relief tank. They had seen the temperature and pressure in that relief tank when they had steam leaking out, coming out of the pressurizer down into the tank. Okay, so when he had the accident, they knew it couldn't be leaking off the top of the pressurizer because it was cooler in the tank, in the PRT. It's cooler. But in fact, it was. So actually being at that higher temperature can result. You just have to get your steam tables out and your Moliere diagram, and you got to work through it and see what temperature, what pressures you end up at. Right. And that higher temperature ends up at a cooler temperature. Tell me God's not smart. So that's not a stumbling block to the hydroplate theory.
Okay.
Where are we? We're on verse 18, I think. Verse 18, the waters prevailed and greatly increased on the earth, and the ark moved about on the surface of the waters. So we see that again. We just got to be saying the waters increased and lifted up the earth and rose high above the earth in verse 17, and now the waters prevailed. So they're conquering the earth. They're coming up over it and greatly increased on the earth. So it's saying it again, prevail, give war. Normally translated, a mighty man or mighty or superior, prevail, increase. Yeah, okay. That's that word prevail. You're going to see it four times in here, and it's the same word, gabor, each time. And they prevailed and increased greatly, or very, very greatly, exceedingly. That word translated increased greatly, that's how it can. That's what it means. It means it's very greatly or exceedingly. So two different ways he's telling us just here in this one verse that the waters are really coming up on the earth. And we talked about that, too, last time. The sea, remember all the waters were gathered together in one place. So before the one continent we had or whatever, the one landmass, before it fractured and started spreading out, it got covered with the sea coming up and displacing its contents onto the land. We talked about that happening in six different stages, and that's really the geological ages that people see. So the ark floated on the surface or face of the waters. I didn't have very many. I got one scripture reference for this whole section. I mean, it's pretty much a historical narrative. It's just telling us what happened, right? And this is the one. Just to look back at Genesis 1:2. It said floated on the face of the waters, and I put it in there. It's the same as when the earth was without form and void, Genesis 1:2. The earth and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. That's the same word. It's the same word there as here. So you're talking about the surface of the waters. And that's kind of a confirmation that what he was talking about back then was the face, the surface of some waters. Right. So, verse 19. And the waters prevailed exceedingly on the earth, and all the high hills under the whole heaven were covered. The waters prevailed exceedingly. They increased greatly, and now they're prevailing exceedingly. You get the idea that there's a lot of water, and it's coming up, and it's coming up fast. Okay. All hills under the whole heaven covered. All the high hills under the whole heaven were covered. That sound local to you? You don't cover... If there's any place else for the water to go, water always seeks its own level. It's going to come roaring down some other side. If there's a hill that's not covered, if there's any area that's not up, the water's not up to the same level as this hill, it's going to be flowing that way, right? So when it says all the high hills were covered, I mean, there's no place left on earth. Especially when you stop and consider that at this point, we think, the land was all in one piece. It was all in one spot. Now, pretty good chunk of land, I guess. I don't know exactly how big. Remember, we talked about it last time, how between the ridges, like the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, the Ring of Fire around the Pacific and all that, remember, we talked about those shapes. It's North and South America and Africa and Europe, they kind of sort of fit together. And they kind of sort of fit together a little bit better if you're looking at the continental shelves. You know, the continental shelves, they run from 300 to 600 feet deep, but it's a shallow area just off the coast, right, before you dive off to the abyssal plains. to the bottom of the sea, right? Those, it fits a little better if you use the continental shelves, but it still doesn't fit quite right. But if you use those fracture lines, the places where we said the seams of the baseball ruptured, if you use those lines, man, they fit together great. They fit just wonderful. Oh, and those exist all over the world. And those fracture lines match up with the mountain ranges that have been, especially the big ones that have been built on Earth since the flood. It matches up a whole lot. It matches up a lot. It matches up very well with those fracture lines out in the out. They're out in the ocean now, except for the ones along the western, yeah, it's the western North America and western coast of South America, the Rocky Mountains and the Andes. That's where those two plates come together, right? There was fracture there. That's where the Ring of Fire is right now, we call it. Right? And that's where those mountains came from. That. They collided. India collided up into Asia, Himalayas. The mountains in Africa, they match up with the fracture zone out in the Indian Ocean. And they're on the eastern side of Africa. When we talked about plate tectonics doesn't have the speed, doesn't have the energy levels to build those kind of mountain ranges, not even over millions of years. So this did. Remember, I don't know if I think I told y'all last time, this just sounds like an impossible number, but Walt Brown's hydroplate theory, he estimated the energy release of the rupture and the flood, the different stages of the flood during that time, was equivalent to the energy release of 80 billion thermonuclear weapons. 80 billion. Yeah, I told you it takes a lot. They're not as powerful as people think, but there's a lot of energy involved in them. A hurricane packs a lot more power than a weapon. A hurricane does. But 80 billion? There's no way the whole planet could build that many. We could not. We could not. If he's correct, and we don't know if he's correct. I'm not sitting here telling you that's all correct. That's one of the theories that's out there, one of the models that's out there looking at the flood and the mechanics that went through it. So you can go look at that. And as a matter of fact, I suggest you do that if you get interested in it. I mean, those videos are, there's good videos available on YouTube. And they're published by different places. Answers in Genesis has some. Some of the other, creation.com has some. And Brian Nickel has a good series on hydroplate theory. And just if you put in catastrophic plate tectonics or hydroplate theory, you'll get them. You'll get them. And they have the graphics. There's a lot of things I wanted to show. We don't have the capability right now for showing graphics or anything. So it's really fascinating. You can see better where the energy came from. The mantle actually supplied the energy to move the continents across the face of the earth. The mantle, all the way down through the crust. Remember, you got the core, you got the mantle, and then you got the crust on top. The crust is, I think at maximum it's about 60 miles thick. Minimum is about 10 miles thick, I think, something like that. But once again, if the Earth's a ball bearing, and you had imperfections in the ball bearing that were the size, the thickness of the crust, you couldn't feel it. You wouldn't know it was there. So we went through increases, prevailed and greatly increased. Waters prevailed exceedingly on the earth, and all the high hills in the heaven were covered. And in verse 20, it says, the waters prevailed 15 cubits upward, and the mountains were covered. Waters prevailed. So they're still conquering. They're still coming up. They came up 15 cubits upward. That's what that means, is that it went 15 cubits above the mountains, the highest mountain. 15 cubits, about 22 and a half feet. The mountains weren't that tall at that point. Remember, they weren't like the Himalayas. The Himalayas didn't exist yet. The Rockies didn't exist yet. The Andes didn't exist yet. They hadn't been formed by the collision of these plates sliding across the surface of the earth, which was part of the flood. So, but they were mountains. I mean, they were a few thousand feet high, whatever. And they can still be higher than the amount of water that would uniformly cover the earth. When a lot of water was trapped up on the continents, everything was changing in elevation. Remember when we looked at Psalm, was it 104 last time? The mountains rose, the valleys descended. Everything's moving around. And he goes, the floor of the sea came up and pushed the water onto the land. And when everything started to drain off, it took a while. Let's see this. It took a while to get the water off the land. Matter of fact, it's not gone yet. You want to see something that's the remnant of the Great Flood, to go look at the Great Salt Lake. It's been shrinking. It's still shrinking. It's drying up. But there was a huge sea in that area, right? And it drained out. When it drained out, one of the things it did was form the Grand Canyon. The Grand Canyon is the largest land canyon on Earth. It's not the largest canyon. There are larger canyons in the seas underground. How do you get those kind of? Yeah, well, they weren't underwater. They weren't. Although you can still get erosion and you can get canyons forming from water density differences, but you got to have a lot of flow for that. You can still have some of that, because certainly you had a lot of flow coming off the land and after the flood. So when the water was up on the land, it had to get off somehow, and it can't. You know how water is. It goes wherever it can find an opening, and if there's an opening, it can find it. So it washed everything out. The sediments that are in the bottom of the oceans, they came off the land. They're down there now. That's where all the sedimentary rock that's on land, where it came from. So 15 cubits upwards, so all of them are covered, and we've got a universal flood. 21, just verse 21, we're just kind of reinforcing that. Okay, the Lord is. And all flesh, there's that word again, all. All flesh died that moved on the earth. Here's our list again. Birds and cattle and beasts and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. And every man, he didn't miss any, didn't miss anything. Everything died. We covered that. We talked about that last time. This is judgment. You don't escape God's judgment. You can't go hide in a cave somewhere. He's going to find you. And he's demonstrating that here. All flesh died that moved. There's that other requirement for life, right? Move. Be able to move, breathe, and have blood. Verse 22. All in whose nostrils was the breath of the Spirit of life, all that was on the dry land died. That's another one of our, we just discussed everything that moved and everything had breath. That's breathe, move. He hasn't said anything about blood yet, but it has life, and life is nefesh, right? Kaya, but life is nefesh. So that's still back to our definition, what we think God's definition is of what constitutes life. And in verse 23, so he destroyed all living things which were on the face of the ground, both man and cattle, creeping thing and bird of the air. They were destroyed from the earth. Only Noah and those who were with him in the ark remained alive. It's kind of a summing everything up. I think this is kind of why it sounds a little redundant. He is hammering home that everything was affected. Every living thing. And if it wasn't in the ark, it died. If it needed land to survive, dry land to survive, it died. And you understand that for the things that don't, for the things that lived in the sea, for the things that could breathe air dissolved in water, most of them died too. Practically all of them. But not, but he didn't need an ark for that. So he didn't require it. There weren't any aquariums on the ark. Verse 24, and the waters prevailed on the earth 150 days. We said before, they were in the ark for 371 days. This 150 days, this is peak flood. We've got a lot of time to go for the waters to drain off. We'll see that at the beginning of chapter 8. Pastor's going to cover starting with chapter 8 next week. Okay. We'll see the waters coming off. It takes a long time for them to go down. And it takes a long time for Noah to get the indications right. You know, they're sending the doves out and having them come back with, you know, showing him whether it's okay to go out. And the Lord lets them know when it's okay to come out. He lets them out. Okay. What do you say when you're at this point in the flood? The earth's covered in water. The ark's floating on top. The ark, you know, it said it moved about on the surface of the waters. Well, it was moving about. The surface of the, it wasn't calm. It wasn't 40 days and 40 nights of rain and the water level came up. If you don't get anything else out of this, get this idea. It was violent. It was catastrophic, horrendous, violent catastrophe. If you go with Walt Brown, looking at him, he thinks the comets, the asteroids, were all spewed out from the Earth at that point. So there's enough energy for escape velocity from the Earth for a considerable amount of mass, although there's not enough mass in the asteroids to constitute a planet. There's not. Right. There's a 80 billion nuclear weapons, maybe not. I don't know. But I do know this. The surface of the earth was rearranged. It was rearranged at God's command. He said, I myself will bring a flood on the earth. He's executed judgment. This isn't just something that happened. This isn't some catastrophe where a comet came along and bumped into the earth or whatever else. This is God. It's God executing judgment. And that ought to be a frightening thing. Yeah. It should help us along and fear God and keep his commandments. We certainly should fear what he is. It's not just what he's capable of, because he's capable of wiping the whole universe out, right? And actually, he didn't have to wipe it out. All he has to do is not will it to continue, which he has to from picosecond to picosecond. If he doesn't, we stop existing. We don't exist. He does. He's the only thing in the universe that does. Even the angels don't exist without him continuing to will them to exist. Yeah, even Satan. Everybody. So, when he says he's going to judge, you ought to believe him. He demonstrated that he will. The great white throne judgment is coming. And everybody will be there. The good news is, you get to live forever. Everybody. The bad news is, you're really not going to enjoy it unless you're his. You're going to... I look at it as it describes hell, which is where you end up. Hell's a real place, and hell is where you end up if you are not Christ. If Christ's blood doesn't cover you and your sin, if he didn't pay the price for you, then you're going to end up in hell, which is described as a burning lake. I look at it like this. You are in an immortal body. Your body will be, you will live in a body, all of us will. We will live in a body forever, okay? Physical body. They won't die. They cannot die. But if you're lost, This is why hell is frightening people once you get the idea of it. You're in a body that won't die, and you've just been thrown into a volcano. The body still feels. If that doesn't motivate us, go out and talk to folks. Most folks are going to reject it. Most folks are. Many is more than few. Many is. But there are some who won't. James covered that last Sunday before last, I guess. So it's a spur on to us for evangelism. Actually, the encouragement I get from it is that God has a chosen people. You don't know who they are. We're not claiming we're the only ones, for sure. But he does have a chosen people, and they will eventually, maybe not right away, maybe not when you're talking to them, maybe so, but they will eventually respond. But everything you say to somebody, especially if you say it to a person who's elect, it's part of their experience, and it will go together. It goes together to bring them to where they need to be, which is to Christ. Right? All right. I thought this was going to be short, but well, it's shorter than last week. Lord and Father, we do thank you for just looking into your word and showing us what it is that your physical judgment looks like, much less your eternal judgment. So make us go out and get busy and be about our Father's business. For I know we can ask that in Christ's name. Amen. Yeah.